Hey everybody, it's Mike. Welcome or welcome back to the Revision Church Podcast. While you're here, make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel and download the Revision app, which is actually the best way to get access to new content and share it with friends. You can get the app by texting Revision app to 77977. Thanks for listening today. My hope is that this message will be helpful for you and would inspire you to take the next step on your faith journey. Amen. You can take a seat. My name is Mike. I'm one of the pastors at Revision. I'm excited to be here this morning. How about you? All right. So this week I read an article about a phenomenon called directed attention fatigue. It's a neuropsychological condition in which our brains are less able to focus on things for a season because they're just tired. And so we end up like less focused, less successful, and less efficient, and more stressed in every single task that's on our plate. Because whether we recognize it or not, our ability to pay attention as humans is limited. Our focus is a finite resource. And once we run out of it, we can't actually pay attention to the things we want to pay attention to or need to pay attention to until we recharge it. And I'm guessing there are a lot of you sitting here thinking, I have never heard of directed attention fatigue before, but I totally relate to that. I've had that happen to me. And if that's you, you're not alone. Apparently, this is becoming an issue for more and more Americans because of the fact that our culture is overscheduled to the breaking point. We fill every minute of every day with activity, and most of the time that isn't filled, we fill up with screens. Phones, computers, or TVs, which actually cause our brains to pay attention as intently as possible, even if what we think we're doing is just decompressing. We're not. Our brains are beat. And not only that, but Americans are now working more hours per week, taking less vacation, and retiring later than we did even a couple decades ago in the 90s. Which is nuts because studies done in the 90s said that Americans were working almost 1 month more per year then than they were a few decades earlier in the 70s. We are an incredibly busy culture. And it's not just workaholism. It's kids and hobbies and activities and youth sports and other youth sports and more youth sports and eating and sleeping and church and most importantly, Netflix and social media, right? Like most of us have calendars that are pretty packed, and it's not just that we're busy, we are busy at an incredibly fast pace. And if we're honest, we kind of like it sometimes. We live in the middle of a culture that'll pat us on the back for it. Like that says if we're running ourselves ragged and we're past the breaking point and we're almost burnt out, we must be doing it right, because that's the American dream, baby. Suck every bit of life we can out of every moment. And we get to the point, not always, but sometimes, where we use our compulsive overscheduling as a humble brag. It's like, I'm not good at taking time to myself. I'm just such a good parent, such a hard worker. Someday I'll take a minute to rest, but I'm a really selfless guy. That's the reason that I'm so busy. It happens. And whether we spend our time trying to convince ourselves that it's a good thing or not, it's a reality of the culture that we're living in. And it's interesting, the pandemic was super weird because it forced all of us to slow down for a minute. And I talked to so many people who said, man, I feel like I'm exhaling for the first time in a long time. But now as things are beginning to open back up, I think all of us can sense that same old pace creeping right back in. We got forced to press pause, and it's almost like we're trying to make up for that by doing everything at double time. And the reality is, like, the G-force of the speed at which most people are living in our society causes a whole lot of frustration and a whole lot of stress in our lives, but most of us just keep living that way anyway because we're afraid not to. Our fear propels us forward. And not very many people have spent time looking at their schedule through the lens of their fear before, but this is totally true. We say things like, I'm so busy. And when we're saying that, we're not saying I'm spending every minute of every day doing something. Because guess what? Every human being on planet Earth is spending every minute of every day doing something. That's called being alive. What we're actually saying is the things that are consuming my minutes are leaving me drained.
The things that are eating up my schedule are not filling up my life. They're not taking me to the place that I thought I would go. And instead of stopping to ask, why am I doing this then? Why don't I just scratch it off my calendar? We keep going because we're scared not to. We worry that we're going to miss out or that our kids are going to miss out. Like if I took a look at your weekly calendar this week and I pointed to some stuff and I asked you, why is this on there? The answer for a lot of those things would start with, well, I'm afraid if I quit. Why are you working so many hours? Why are you not taking the full allotment of vacation you've been given? Well, I'm afraid if I don't work like this, then I'm not going to get that raise, and I'm not going to get that promotion, and then? Why is your kid in 9 different activities 8 nights a week? Well, I'm afraid if she doesn't do it, then she'll never get the full ride scholarship. Or if I'm afraid if he doesn't play all the sports, we won't know which one he's good at and he'll never go pro. Like, we laugh at that, but you guys, we are letting our fear and our culture drive us to the point where we live, like, at the limit or above the limit. The truth is, you have a limit. You have a top speed that you can go before you cannot go any faster. I actually Googled this week, how fast can a human go before they die? And then Courtney walked in, and she's like, why are you Googling weird stuff? So I don't know the answer. I never learned it. I don't know if your body can go the speed of light before spontaneously combusting. I don't even know if that's a thing we can know. I'd like to know it, but that's not what I'm talking about anyway. What I mean is you have a limited set of things you can accomplish before you cannot accomplish any more things. And it's different for every person in this room. We have a different pace that we're able to go. I know some of you are thinking, not me. I'm the Energizer Bunny. I can just keep going and going and going, and I will never burn out. And that's not true. Like, you couldn't be more wrong. Some of you can go faster, longer than others of us who are afflicted with conditions that make life more difficult, like long-term illnesses or kids who apparently hate bed. Like, whatever that may be, we've all got a limit. And the gap that exists between the pace of your life and the limit of your life is the capacity that you have to rest. That gap and that capacity is incredibly important. Like, way more than you know. Because when that gap shrinks and you begin to live at your limit, your stress level goes up and your attention level goes down. You get directed attention fatigue and you cannot focus anymore. And when you lose control of your focus and lose control of your schedule, the quality of every single relationship in your life goes down. This morning we're closing off the series we've been in for the last month called Your Future Self. We've been trying to get some wisdom for life before we need it, so that when we need it, our future selves will thank us. And today, I want to talk about how we view the time we've been given. Because I'm convinced that if we don't start to see it differently than everybody around us, we're going to settle for lives that are less than the ones God wants us to live. We're actually going to settle for living less than fully alive. And before we dig in, I need to have a moment of confession up here. I am not standing on the stage today as an expert in schedule management. I am totally the overscheduled, love it that I'm crazy busy guy who believes somewhere deep down inside of me that I don't have a speed limit and that I can just keep cranking up the pace and I will never burn out. And the part of me that believes that is an idiot. Okay, because I've seen what happens when I crank it up too far. There's a cost to it and I've paid that cost. So I'm really grateful for our board. Today, after our annual meeting, I'm leaving for a one-month sabbatical. And it's something our board asked me to do last summer, and then COVID happened. And that was just a real blast for all of us. And thought maybe we shouldn't leave while we're navigating this. But this summer, they asked me to take a month. And like the love, the grind, breakneck speed American in me is like, but you guys, I'm not even burnt out. I'm not even close to burnout. So what if instead of taking a break, I just went faster? Because that's what I want to do. And I'm not burnout. I love it. I love that I get to do this. But the board told me, yeah, that's actually the perfect time to take a break. Well, there's still a gap between your pace and your limit. It's not always that helpful to take a break after things are on fire. So go, rest, and let God fill you up with what he wants to do in and through you in the next season. And so all that to say, number one, I am profoundly grateful for the wise, incredible leaders who are shepherding and guiding this church and keeping me accountable. And number two, I am learning this stuff right along with you. I have never been good at it, not for one day in my life, and every mentor that I have has identified this as like a possible future destruction area for me. And in their more brutal moments, a sin. like a space where I'm rebelling against what I know God's calling me to do because of my pride and my fear and a whole lot of other ugly stuff in me. And so I just want to be real about that with you, because I think part of the debt I owe you, because I get to do what I get to do, is like the most raw, transparent version of me that I can give you. And all of my faults and failures and fears, even though they're ugly and gross. So I'm not proud to admit, this is an area where I have to get some wisdom or my future self is going to pay a price. I think it's an area where a whole lot of us need some wisdom, or we're going to live lives and settle for stories that are less than the stories God wants to write. Because this idea that rest is part of what it means to be human, part of what it means to live fully alive, is not just found in some random verse somewhere. Like, you really gotta search for it. It is woven throughout God's story from the beginning to the end. If you read the creation poem in Genesis 1 and 2, what does it say? It says that God created human beings in his own image. That he spoke and the earth was created, and then he made humans, and then he sat back and did what? He rested and enjoyed the work of his hands. And if you handed somebody who had no context to the Bible, they'd never read anything else, they had no idea about Christianity, if you handed them just Genesis 1 and 2, you're like, read this poem. What do you think it means for humans to be created in the image of God? How would they answer? Like, well, God creates, so it must mean creativity. It must mean dreaming and creating things in the world. And God rules, he works, he makes stuff, so it must mean work. It must mean taking care of all the things that he's made. And God rests. So it must mean rest. It must mean taking time to sit back and breathe in the beauty that's all around you. And it does. That's part of what it means to be human beings created in the image of God. And God's pretty serious about it. It's not something that he says, hey, you know, if you got time, I know you're busy, I know you got a really, you know, a whole bunch of important stuff on your schedule, but if you can find time every month or every other month to just take a break, that'd be really awesome. That's not what God says about this stuff. He commands it. If you guys have ever read the Old Testament, you know that there are hundreds of laws in there that God gives to his people for their good and for their benefit, but there's some that are special, like this different set, God's top 10 list. At one point, God took the nation of Israel out of 400 years of slavery in Egypt, and he started shaping them into his people so that they could show the world who he is and all about his love. And then Moses went up on this mountain, he came down with the 10 commandments. He's like, okay, these 10, if you get nothing else right, these 10 things help point you to the heart of God. They'll help you live out that divine spark that he's placed inside all of you. He says stuff like, don't kill anybody. Don't steal. Don't commit adultery. Don't lie. Take a day off every week. Like, he puts that right in there alongside the other big 10, because he knows we have an inclination to do so much that we don't enjoy much of what we do. I'm gonna say that again. We have an inclination to do so much that we don't enjoy much of what we do. If you got a Bible or a Bible handy, crack it open to Psalm 90. It's almost dead center. If you don't have a Bible, you can follow along with the words on the screen or in the Revision app. And if you need a Bible or your kids do, please snag one from the Next Steps table before you go today, or let us know on your digital connection card and we'll mail you one. But we're going to look at a life-changing concept today in Psalm 90, something that will change the way we think about time. And the truth is, if we change the way we relate to time, we change our lives, because our lives are the summation of the seconds we've been given. Psalm 90 is a poem, it's a prayer written by Moses, which is kind of weird because we don't often think of Moses as a psalmist. But if you read the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible, which he wrote, you realize that he often wrote these poetic prayers to God. So we're going to look at what he has to say. But if you're anything like me, we're going to be honest and you'd be like, well, okay, that's great. But for people working incredibly stressful, high-pressure jobs in America in 2021, what does a guy who spent most of his life in the desert 3,500 years ago have to say? Like, what sort of wisdom can we get from him? And I think that's a fair question. But in my opinion, Moses has some unique perspective on time that we could learn from. For starters, he lived to be 120. That's old. When you get to be that old, you get something about the scope of life that other people don't get. And so if you're 121 years old or older in here this morning, you can get up and walk out right now. No one will judge you. Moses got nothing on you. But for those of you 119 and younger, maybe we should listen to what the old geezer has to say, right? He might know more than us. And number two, he has some unique perspective on time because of his different experiences. Like, he grew up in the house of Pharaoh. He was a member of the court of this guy who got treated like a deity on earth and presided over the wealthiest nation on the planet. Like, Moses grew up living a life of luxury. And then this thing happened that escalated quickly, and he killed a dude, and he had to go hide out for a while, and he spent the next 40 years working as a shepherd in the desert. Every day he got up, he took his sheep out to graze, he watched his sheep graze, he took them home, he went to bed, he got up, he took his sheep out to graze, he watched his sheep graze, he took them home, he went to bed. If you work a job you think is a grind, just Moses did this stuff for 40 years, and he thought he was going to die doing that job every single day, until one day he saw this bush that was on fire, but it wasn't burning, and God called out to him and sent him on a mission. And he went on this incredible adventure for God and became God's mouthpiece to Pharaoh, and he liberated the nation of Israel from slavery, took them across the Red Sea, led them to God knows where, like literally only God knew. They just followed him. They got to the cusp of the promised land, and then all the people were like, we don't want to go in, there's giants in there. And God was like, all right, Moses, walk them around in circles in the desert for the next 40 years until they're all dead. I'll take the next generation in. And Moses did that for the last 40 years of his life until they got to the promised land and he didn't get to go in. That's quite a life story, and one that, in my opinion, gives him some perspective that might just be valuable to us. And this is what he writes in Psalm 90, starting in verse 1. It says, Lord, you have been our dwelling place throughout all generations. Before the mountains were born, or you brought forth the whole world, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. Such a cool image right there. Moses said, God, your arrows go in both directions. Everlasting one way, and everlasting the other way. And somewhere between the bookends of everlasting to everlasting, the mountains were born. You spoke and the world exploded into being, and then somewhere on down the line, there's me. And then he continues in verse 3. You turn people back to dust, saying, return to dust, you mortals. 1,000 years in your sight are like a day that has just gone by, or like a watch in the night. It's like 3 hours. Yet you sweep people away in the sleep of death. They're like the new grass of morning. In the morning, it springs up new, but by the evening, it's dry and withered. It's an intense couple of verses, huh? Offensive, even, to like our modern consciences. But Moses isn't trying to be offensive here. He's trying to highlight something really important, that God is sovereign over the beginning and the end, that God has something to say about when life begins and when it ends. And that doesn't mean that God is sitting up there just zapping us whenever he gets bored, like, Carl. But it does mean that he knows how many days we've got left on this planet. And the truth is that people, even who don't consider themselves Christians or don't consider themselves people of faith at all, tend to believe that there is some sort of deity that has influence over when life begins and when life ends. And I know that's true because I've been doing this job long enough to know that when people get sick, or when they get terminal diagnoses, or their loved ones do, they pray. They pray even if they have never prayed before. And what Moses is telling us here is you're right to pray, because there is a God who is sovereign over the beginning and the end. He knows how many breaths we're going to take. And then Moses reminds us, rather harshly, that no matter how long we live, that number of breaths is not a very big number. Life is here and it's gone. So you know how like sometimes you have a day and you get to the end and you're like, wow, that day flew by, or a week, and you're like, that flew by. Moses goes, that's what 1,000 years is like to God. God is like, wow, that last millennium. Whew, like, whew. And that's what it's like for him. He says, human beings spring up and shrivel up real quickly. Life is fleeting and fragile. This is pretty inspiring stuff this morning, isn't it? Hold on to your hats. It's about to get better. This is what Moses says next. We're consumed by your anger and terrified by your indignation. You've set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your presence. All our days pass away under your wrath. We finish our years with a moan. Our days may come to 70 years or 80 if our strength endures. Quick time out. That's a pretty condescending thing for a 120-year-old guy to write, but whatever. He's being honest. It says, yet the best of them are but trouble and sorrow, for they quickly pass and we fly away. if only we knew the power of your anger. Your wrath is as great as the fear that is your due. And Moses here dives into the reason that our time is short. It's a consequence of sin. He says, look, we were built to live forever, but we live 70 or 80 years because we turned our backs on the God who created us for relationship with himself, on the source of our life. We live in this world that's messed up and full of death because we chose it. Our lives are temporary because of our rebellion. And he tells us, even though that's true, even though that's true, it doesn't mean our lives are meaningless. Temporary and meaningless are not the same thing at all. There's this line in there, it says, your wrath is as great as the fear that is your due, which is a really weird thing to say, but this is what he's trying to say. If we could see God as he truly is, then we'd give him the reverence that he truly deserves, specifically as it relates to our lives and our time. Like if we could get an accurate picture of how holy and how big this God really is, we would change the way that we're living because we'd realize that we have only a short time to make an impact for his glory. We start to see our lives differently if we realized that the scope of our lives is not just our lives. The scope of our lives is eternity to eternity. If we understood the brevity of it, we would use time differently than we're using it. So how would we use it differently? He answers that in the next verse. In verse 12, he gives us this vision. And this is the big idea of the psalm that I want to lean into this morning. This is what he writes. Teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Teach us, because we need to learn. We don't think this way on our own. Teach us to number our days, to live like our days are numbered. This is what Moses is saying to me and you. Live like your time is limited. Live like your time is limited. Our twins just turned 7 last month, which is nuts. And I got this Facebook memory of their first birthday party, like right after we had moved to Des Moines, and it hit me like a ton of bricks. I blinked and time disappeared. You know, the days feel very, 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 very long sometimes, but the years are flying by. And I realized, like, when they're 18, they're probably gonna go somewhere, unless Jenny and I royally screw this up, which is like 50-50. But like, it doesn't mean I'm never gonna see them again. Or that 4 years later, they're not going to move back into my basement. But it does mean that over a third of the time I have with them as kids is gone, and it is not coming back. And I don't stop to think about that very often, to think about time as a finite resource. And most of us don't, which is weird because we know that it is. And with other things that we understand are finite, we adjust to those. We understand that money is a finite resource, and so we limit our money. But how often do we stop to think time is a limited resource? I ought to limit my time. I think there are only like a few seasons of life where we do that. If you've ever been married, you have that season that's short, but it feels like forever, where you're like counting down to the big day, and you're like, this is what I need to do to get done because my time is limited leading up to this. But so often in our daily lives, we're just kind of rolling, thinking we're going to be living these lives forever, like time is unlimited, and it doesn't matter. And Moses is saying, no. Huge mistake. Huge mistake. If you're going to make the most of the minutes, you need to limit your limited time. And he's not saying that to be discouraging. He's not trying to beat us up here. He's actually trying to encourage us. He's trying to say, God created you for a purpose, and God is here with you for a reason, and you have a chance if you'll focus on what's important, and you'll create space to live fully alive, to live a better story than the people around you are living, and to create a better future for the people around you. You have a chance to do this if you'll just gain the spirit of wisdom that comes from limiting your time. See, look, when you see time as it truly is, when you see eternity as it truly is, when you see life as it truly is, then you begin to think more clearly about what really matters and what doesn't matter that much, about the things you really want to spend your life and your time on and the things that you don't want on your calendar anymore because they're sucking the life out of you and wasting your life away. I think if we can't learn to see time the way Moses is inviting us to see it here, then frustration and cognitive fatigue and chasing after things that don't matter will be the legacy of our lives. And for so many of us, my worry is that's where we're headed in every single area. I think with work in America, we've traded peace for prosperity. And then ironically enough, we work tons and tons of hours in the hope that maybe someday we can gain enough prosperity to buy ourselves back some peace. I think with our families and our kids, we have traded time and connection for achievement. Do this thing, that thing, and everything. And if we get to the end of our lives and we haven't learned to limit our time, we will find that we missed out on a whole lot of what we wanted. There's a book called Regrets of the Dying. It's written by Bronnie Ware. She's a hospice nurse from Australia who spent almost her entire career nursing people during the last few weeks of their lives. It's a fascinating book, kind of a penetrating look at the human condition and an interesting roadmap of where our crazy, busy, overscheduled 21st century Western culture is leading us. And this morning, I want to highlight for you the top two regrets that people have on their deathbeds. I'm going to start with number two because I think it's one that a lot of us would expect to be number one. It's, I wish I wouldn't have worked so hard. Bronnie Ware wrote that 100% of the men, 100%, every single one she sat next to while they were dying, listed this regret. And many of the women did as well, though for an older generation, some of them weren't breadwinners. But she said she looked at person after person after person as they took their last breaths on this planet and lamented to her the time they had spent chasing their careers at the expense of time they could never, ever get back with their kids. The expense of trips their friends wanted to go on that they never ended up making space for, at the expense of marriages that fell apart because the relationship was sacrificed on the altar of success. And the number one regret that people had when they were dying is this: I wish I'd had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. This one is sobering. Many of the patients spoke about the dreams that their parents had for them, which is a great reminder for parents. If you're too successful, it's going to put too much pressure on your kids. If you're a failure, they won't want to be like you. And if you're anything in the middle, you're boring. There's no winning as parents. Just lose, lose, lose. Parents stink. But seriously, so many people talk about these dreams that they had that they never accomplished. And Bronnie Ware estimated that most people accomplish only a fraction of the things in life that they wanted to accomplish. Which I think begs the question for you and me: what are the dreams God has placed inside your soul that you want to see happen before your dying day? What's the vision? What's the change? What's the impact that God is thundering inside your heart that he wants you to make before you take your last breath? What's in there? And what are the things in your schedule right now that are keeping you too busy to chase that stuff? So busy that those dreams and those God-given visions are shriveling up inside of you. Because I think all of us have that stuff. I know I do. Because those are the two biggest regrets that people have when they're dying. You're welcome. I just fast-forwarded you to the end. That's what it looks like there, okay? That's what it looks like. So the question is, what are you going to do about it now? Moses is offering us a different vision, a different way to view time, a way to make the most of our minutes by living every day like our time is limited, by deciding to get rid of the busyness that keeps us from chasing the God dreams that matter most and keeps us from enjoying every single minute by breathing in the beauty of the world God created. Look, we got to create space for doing the stuff that matters and for resting. And I know that almost sounds counterintuitive to say that, like, limiting our time and learning that we have a limited number of breaths before we die on this planet means there's space to rest. Right? It almost seems like we should be more stressed out and more busy and more overscheduled because we don't have enough time, and so why should we rest? But I love the way Moses closes this psalm. In verse 17, he writes this: may the favor of the Lord our God rest on us. And he's praying. He says, establish the work of our hands for us. Yes, establish the work of our hands. He said, hey, in the middle of all this, remember, God is in charge, not you. God is responsible, not you. God is the one who makes you successful. He is the one who establishes the work of your hands, not you. It's not about your hard work. It's not about how many hours you put in. It's about God providing for you. And this is the whole point of Sabbath, by the way. It's not just to rest our bodies. It's to rest our pride. so that our bodies can find rest from the busyness of our work week, and so that our pride can find rest from the idea that we are in charge and that we're responsible. And God says, look, if you can come to this space where you realize that your life is limited and that I am sovereign, then you can live fully human and fully alive, because you can aim your life in the direction of the things that matter, and you can find rest in the beauty of my provision and the beauty of the world that I created. And so I think, like, this morning it's time for us to borrow an old Tim McGraw line. We need to live like we were dying. And that doesn't mean you got to go skydiving, Rocky Mountain climbing, or ride 3.7 seconds on a bull named Fu Manchu, right? It doesn't. But it means for all of us that if we can understand who God made us to be and how God made us to live, we can take the limited number of breaths we've got left and aim them at the things we want most. And we can find peace and rest in that in a way that fills our souls and helps us be fully human and fully alive. Will you guys pray with me? God, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to rest. Thank you for the opportunity to drink in the beauty of the world that you made. And thank you for the peace, just the profound, life-changing, world-changing, perspective-changing peace that comes from realizing that you are sovereign and you're in control. Would you teach us, Lord, to number our days so that we may gain a heart of wisdom? Teach us to see our lives as they really are, to stop treating time as an endless resource and start making the most of the minutes that we've been given, and stop wasting them away on the things that we don't care about, so that we can get to the end of our lives and our future selves will be grateful that we aimed them in the direction of enjoying every minute of the beauty all around us and making the impact for your glory that you created us to make. God, thank you for your peace. Thank you for the minutes you've gifted us. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.